A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. The dairy lads had a day out in Moorpark this week, while the suckler lads are crying that the department have taken back the bee money without giving them a chance to put the check in the post. Shout out to our supporters, Ornua, European Milk Forum and Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Later in the show, I'm going to be talking to overall winner of the NDC Kerrygold Quality Milk Award, Alex McCarthy, about what's happening in the fields around Limerick. In a minute, I'm going to talk to Adam, Darren and Aidan. But before that, let's start with the quick fire round. And we normally start with it, so we'll stay at that. Email your queries or questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, two quick ones here for you. Tell Adam I saw him in Carnegross at the limousine pedigree sale. Ask him, did he buy anything?
No, Jack. No, a bit too dear, Jack, for a cabin man. Kept
the hand in the pocket. Okay. Has Adam any advice? I have two overfat cows that are due to calve in about 2 months. We've plenty of grass at the moment, but should I cut them back on grub to try and slim them down a touch? So they're two overfat suckler cows due to calve in 2 months. Adam, plenty of grass. Cut them back a bit, or what's the plan?
Funny, Jack, I was speaking to two vets a couple of weeks ago, and we've already seen issues with this on some beef farms. There's been a really good back end. It's been a really good summer for grass. And I suppose there are some issues out there, calving cows, because they're in too good a condition. 2 months is rimming it, Jack, in terms of going in very tight on them cows. You're probably better trying to restrict them back maybe at 5 or 6 months in gestation rather than 2 months out. You probably still would get away a little bit with restricting, maybe trying to not give them just lush grass and keep them on a tight paddock, maybe graze them after another group of stock or something like that, and just try it. I wouldn't be overfeeding them, I suppose, for that. But for the last couple of weeks, you want to be careful that you don't go in with too much for that.
Okay. Darren, two quick ones for you. They must think he bought a lot of money. Did Darren bid on the sheepdog that made €27,000 over in Wales? Just shows what a good dog is worth. Has Darren any idea how the person that paid that sort of money will get it back? Darren, sheepdogs, €27,000.
Yeah, Jack. Look, at sheepdog breeding is big business, particularly across the water. There's, with labour becoming a bigger issue, there's a certain breed lines. And I think that this breed line will be very good as, say, in the hillside or the hill system type of thing. So, but we've seen it here, Jack, as well. Look, what we've seen in recent years, there's good money for good sheepdogs, and a lot of it is to do with breeding and also labour availability. And look, some of it goes down to the man working the dog, but if it's not in the dog in particular, you've no hopes.
And Darren, will that dog go working, or is he going to stud now, or a bit of both, or what?
I imagine, Jack, if you were paying 27,000, you'd want to have jumped him a bit first before you'd send him off working. I'd say it'd be a combination, Jack.
No, that's okay. Last question for you. The second question for you, Darren. Have Tullamore farmed the rams out?
Nope, it'll be probably around the 20th of October.
Okay, they have another month yet to go. Aidan, two quick ones for you. Ask Aidan, what one key message did he take from the Moorpark Open Day this week?
Probably Patrick French's statement that you should be future-proofing your farm business by, you know, investing in sustainability, like extra slurry storage, clover, soil fertility, those type of stuff. Like, so yeah, that was the key, key message I got.
Nice one. And the second question relates to clover. It says, I seem to be swamped with clover now, but had very little early in the year. Will you ask Aidan, is that normal? And is there anything I can do to improve early season clover?
So it is normal, is the first thing. Yeah, like, I mean, the autumn, the, from kind of July on, June, July onwards, clover starts to take over. It's hard to manage it, to have more of it in early spring. It's a later in the season kind of a, it's a, you know, it's a second half kind of a species that performs well in the latter half of the grazing season. Not a lot you can do, I suppose, to make sure that it's there in the springtime is essential. So don't be closing at very high covers on your high clover paddocks, because they're going to be bare in wintertime. So keep a low cover in those paddocks over winter, and you should have clover there in spring.
Okay, thanks for that, Aidan. Adam, back to you in terms of the main show. I mean, I see bean mixed in with a little bit of ANC is probably back in the headlines. Can you kind of maybe bring us up to speed in terms of what happened this week on that side?
Yeah, so letters were issued, Jack, last week out to farmers, 3,600 farmers who failed to meet the required stock and rate reduction for that initial reference period. But that has developed on since, and I guess farmers this week would have been receiving their ANC payments into their bank accounts. And I've been pretty shocked to see that the BEAM, we'll say, penalty has actually been taken off that ANC payment. There was no word of this in the letter last week, Jack, and I suppose it's a little bit underhand by the department. Now, the Minister for Agriculture has come out and apologised to farmers, and he has instructed his department officials to apologise as well for the way that it was handled. And I guess it was a simple line in that letter last week, Jack, to say that, look, at your ANC payment next week, we're going to deduct that BEAM penalty off it. Look, that's in the charter, I suppose, that they're able to do that, but it's just about a little bit of communication. IFA President Tim Cullinan has come out again saying it's a disgrace as regards what has happened and the way farmers are being treated on this. And it's just, look, it's a shambles from day one, Jack, and in terms of the way it's been handled, even if we go right back to the infrastructure that was in place for communicating to farmers the stocking rate on their farm, that wasn't there. And ever since that, it's gone from bad to worse.
No, you're right. I see Anne Finnegan has a piece there in the Journal on Germany and the cap and what they're going doing in the next couple of years. They have some portion of their envelope, I suppose, that's into a coupled payment. Adam, is there some talk of a kind of a coupled suckler cow payment again, or what's happening there?
You have some rumbles there, Jack. I was down south Tuesday and I called into Henry Burns on the way back up the road and just to have a chat with him about where the thing was going. And Henry's a big, strong proponent for a couple payment. And he was just saying, look, we should have been fighting for a couple payment here. And look, he makes a very valid reason that if we did couple that payment, people are sort of saying that, look, we have entitlements going to farmers that aren't actively farming. And how do you define an active farmer? But if we would say coupled a payment to suckler cows or to ewes, you'd be guaranteeing then that payment would go to active farmers and it would go to the people that's actually calving the cow and lambing the ewe. I know now that comes off a lot of other farmers' entitlements, but you're supporting the low-income sectors. And that's what, as Henry made the point in the paper this week, that's what CAP is supposed to do. It's supposed to support those vulnerable sectors. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me, to be honest, to be coupling that to suckler cows, because look, they need that support.
Beef trade, Adam, what happened this week? Any positives?
Yeah, it's positive. Sell them in September. We see an improvement in prices, Jack, but this September is a little bit different. A guy told me that procurement managers are doing rain dances in offices this week looking for rain, but nobody's listening up above to them. Up 5 cent. Bullocks up 5 cent. Heifers up 5 cent. Very, very positive. And still factories anxious for cattle, looking for cattle. A lot of cattle moving north. A lot of those smaller factories are actually killing on contract for the north. So we get figures every week for cattle moving on the hoof up north. We don't get figures for carcasses hanging going up north, and there's a lot of that happening at the moment.
I see you're slipping away the dairy beef animals from the Tri Farm in Cashel. It's nice to get a share of them away in September before it gets kind of wet as you into October. I mean, but the one piece I was picking up on is that, like, those heifers are still kind of, they're coming 4 pluses, 5 minuses. They're still coming fat, like, even like you're watching them tight down there now. There's enough, like, there's plenty of eyes on those heifers, like, and you're still kind of, I'd call it, they're still getting away a bit warm on you, some of them kind of smaller breed type heifers.
Yeah, maybe it's the wrong eyes is on them, Jack. We're trying to keep a tight eye on them. It's very hard to keep them from going. Look, it's been a really good back end, really good grass here. And yeah, they're going 4+. And look, we had the webinar last week and we went down to the factory and we thought, you know, maybe they weren't 4+, but they actually are. And look, that's the challenge with those cattle, to avoid them going into that. People would say to us, God, you're only killing store cattle down there. You should be putting them in for the winter. But if we do that, should they be into fives and over it if we did? So yeah, it's a real challenge. And look, I'd say, yeah, farmers, get them in, weigh them, handle them, make sure you're pulling hard.
And Adam, in terms of like they're coming into 1150, the heifers are coming into 1150, the bullocks into 1300, and but it's like it's good money for, like, I know you're always giving out about dairy beef, but it's good money for the time of year, like we'll say, killing off grass, and you know, for that type of animal that hasn't got a whole lot of input into it.
Yeah, I suppose. Look, it's an unusual year, Jack, in terms of we're a very good beef price coming in September, October time. And look, we're doing everything right down there. What I'm saying is, and we need to be very careful in pushing that system onto farms out there, because John Halley is an extremely good manager of paddock system. There's a huge amount of good stuff going on that farm, and we're doing the very best we can. And that's why we're coming out the other end. If there was any errors along the way there, or we had an outbreak of a disease, or we weren't growing as much grass as we are, we weren't getting enough grass into the animals, we'd be a lot worse off.
But your
no, there's no millions in it. There's no millions in it, Jack.
Oh no, there's not millions in many things, like, you know. But I mean, your caution on that whole system is that a lot of your farms up the west of Ireland, like, are not growing the grass, like, and the quality of grass isn't there to drive those animals on to get them out of the gate at kind of 19, 20 months.
Absolutely. Look, suckler farmers need to be very careful about that system. And I'm saying, I think the best option there is, Jack, for a suckler farmer, maybe dip his toe in the water, his or her toe in the water, bring in, you know, your 10 or 20 and just see how they go. This crack of liquidizing a suckler herd and coming in with thousands and then going out and buying calves, that's not a good way to go. We have a long way to go on this in terms of the genetics that's been used on the dairy herd and where we're going as regards quality of calves. And it'd be a wrong decision for a farmer to turn his back on sucklers and go and down that dairy cap.
No, that's fair enough. But even though we touch off the mart trade now, Adam, but I mean, those type of animals, dairy bred animals in the mart, are still doing, you know, the average type animals, like we'd say in terms of conformation, like, you know, they're still making 230, 240 for kind of 500 kilo animals, like, you know, it's 500 plus kilo animals, like, it's decent money at this time of the year as well, like, you know, if you're not bringing them the whole way to the factory.
Yeah, you're strong now at 230, 240. I actually looked at it this week. Shane is off this week, and I was looking at the Mart Watch Figure Map, his database, and you're talking top third there, and in that 500 to 600 kilo bracket, we'll say for heavy bullocks, you're talking 60¢ there, differential between the top third and the bottom third, which is a massive differential. It's €330 on a 550 kilo animal, and you're probably closer to €192 for those animals in terms of those heavier, we'll say, dairy beef animals. Yeah, but they are. They're a good. And you'll see, I actually made the comment in the paper this week, when we see feedlots coming out now to buy, they haven't started to buy, when we see them coming out to buy, they'll actually head for those animals for their premium brands now in a short couple of weeks.
Yeah, you must be buying them now. I get they're making 220, 230 down around this part of the world anyway. I don't know about you, up the country. In terms of the pedigree side of things, Adam, like, I mean, there's been some great shows, and there's some kind of lovely footage across the journal in terms of a lot of those events. Like, I mean, are they becoming more popular, those type of kind of, I call it, specialized, you know, sales, show and sales, we'll say, Adam? Like, is there kind of a change happening there in that whole space?
I suppose, Jack, what we've seen last weekend was the first two coming back, shows for the summer. We had no shows for the summer at all. The Shorthorns were the first out of the trap last Saturday, and within held their first ever national show. Really good event, really positive event. Hereford then had their national show in Anna Harvey Equestrian Centre in Tullamore on Sunday, an all ticketed event. This is the first time we've seen one of these where you had to actually register beforehand and you had to show your ticket at the gate, and that was to do with COVID compliance. Went off glitch free, everybody very, very happy, exhibitors and spectators. And look, really positive to see, I suppose, over 100 animals at that Hereford show on Sunday, and people displaying their wares. And look, just giving that sort of show and fraternity a great positive. And look, across the pages this week, we tried to capture that with all the photos and the results from those championships.
Okay, Adam, rock and roll. Chat to you again next week. Darren, moving to you. I see the Galway girls are back at the top table. They were good, like.
In fairness, Jack, they are. Yeah, I think they finished the year with more than Tipperary with regards silverware, despite all the abuse he gave us down through
They've won two of the last three. In fairness, they're coming back. They're coming strong. But they were good against, like, Cork are good. You know, the girls, Cork girls are good. And like, when they got the goal late in the match, I thought, like, they could take it. You know.
Yeah, look, in fairness to them, they finished the match out hugely positively. Like I thought as well, when that goal went in, I said the momentum had shifted and they dug in deep and got over the line, and like got over the line very impressively.
Yeah, they did. Darren, €6 a kilo still available for lambs. Like, it's not often we can say that at the end of September.
No, Jack, and like that's after coming, I suppose we can bemoan the fact the prices came back by 30 or 40 cents in the last 3 or 4 weeks, but they seem to have steadied this week a bit. There was a few weeks there where there was big kills, and that was even shown. Like if I look at the Department of Agriculture kills for the last 3 weeks, it's over 63,000. Last week it was 64,500. So it's running sort of 3,000 or 4,000 ahead of the same week last year. So there was plenty of lambs in the system, and this week they just have tightened up a small bit. A couple of things, I suppose, adding to that. Mark numbers were a bit tighter in that lamb supplies are generally maybe just falling off a small bit. But when prices fell by 30 to 40 cents, a lot of farmers who were moving lambs at maybe 18, 19, 19 and a half kilos said, Jenny, I'll compensate now. I have plenty of grass and I'll carry them through to a bit heavier weight. And I think that has helped to just steady the ship and help to, I suppose, maybe stop the same volume of sheep meat that's going into the market. Still is pressure on yours, but it's more positive on the lamb side. A lot of lambs moving, as you say, between 5.90, €6, and then producer groups, fellas trading at the high end of the market, 6.10, maybe top 6.50.
Darren, my buddy next door was saying in terms of his lambs, he has felt in the last couple of weeks that maybe the bloom isn't in him as much as kind of, I suppose, that he was maybe expecting earlier on in the year. Like, I mean, is that kind of a nationwide piece? Is there something going on there in terms of lamb thrive, we'll say, at the moment, middle of September onwards? Like,
yeah, it's funny you should say, Jack. That's probably something that we've had the most feedback in the last few weeks, is that questions around just lambs not doing well in regards to daily performance, but also not killing well. And now there's a huge variation, I should say, because some people are quite happy. Tullamore Farm, we're very happy. Sean is killing away at the lambs. His lambs are getting a bit of meal feeding there. They're tipping along 46, 47% kill out, which is way ahead of other years. But in particular, there's a lot of farmers that would have seen maybe grass supplies improve drastically and see the lambs haven't been doing on it. And I've talked to a couple of vets, a couple of advisors, and the picture is pretty consistent across the country. And there's a couple of things feeding into it. One is that after that prolonged dry spell, the rain that came after it brought about, I suppose, a significant hatch of worms on pastures that were already highly enough contaminated. And even where farmers had maybe treated lambs before that and thought to get away for 3, 4, 5 weeks without coming back in again, there's been a spike in worm burdens in fecal egg count. So I think the message there is to go in definitely and take a fecal egg count if you haven't taken one in last while. Second thing was cobalt. And look, at this time of the year, cobalt deficiency always raises its head from August, September onwards. Telltale signs of that are maybe lambs going a bit dry in the wool. You'll see sort of skin flaking off their ears. And just lambs not thriving. And look, if you're not weighing regular, you're not maybe going to recognise that starting off. And then we're probably putting a bit more, I suppose, maybe value on grass at the moment. Is this swaths have come very lush. Yes, they're high quality, but the dry matter content mightn't be as high as what we expect. And the rate of grass is probably moving through lambs quicker. And like a lot of fellas there that would have maybe strong ram lambs, they've found a significant benefit the last 2 weeks in bringing in a small level of meal, because not only are you increasing the overall energy content, you're probably slowing down the rate of grass passing through the lamb, and that's helping them to absorb more nutrients from the grass as well.
And Darren, on the cobalt one, are they giving them a drench as well? Is there cobalt in any of them worm drenches? Is it kind of a two-in-one job, is there?
No, generally not. Like the Dole's, I suppose, one that a lot of farmers would have been used to was the Dole Panicure one, where there would have been a bit of pink on top of it. Yeah. Look, the cheap and cheerful, Jack, is to come in with your ordinary cobalt every 2 weeks, at a maximum 3 weeks. Yes, you can bolus lambs now, but that's probably more of a sort of option for long keep lambs.
Okay.
And also, if you're feeding meal and you're relying on cobalt coming through the meal, just check the inclusion rates, because a lot of the mineral status, it wouldn't be that high in cobalt.
Okay. You have a nice piece there on the building side in terms of the planner permissions. Like, I see 423 approvals with something like 360 or 370 new bills in kind of farm building scenarios like that. And that's just for 3 months. Like there's definitely plenty of activity in the market, or people at least considering it or lining up, albeit that the prices of stuff is high, Darren. Like, you know, I mean, how does that rate in terms of approvals? Like, where does it kind of stand?
Yeah, like it's very hard to say compare to 2020 because it was such an unusual year that people didn't put in planning applications, and there's a lot of sort of pent up demand because of that. But if we compare it to other years or previous years, it's running ahead of previous years. And a lot of that, I think, Jack, is to do with, look, there still is conversions. But it's something that we talked about so much, is that farmers are becoming more cognizant around slurry storage, side water storage. There's been expansion has taken place and farmers needing to do maybe more buildings. And the fact that some of these have already done bits of buildings, they're above the exemptions that are there in place for farmers. So like most yards now that you go into, if there's any bit of a building, no matter how small, they're going to need planning permission from it. And like a lot of the engineers would say to me that some farmers are putting it in to keep, sort, I suppose, keep progressing ahead with plans. How many of them will be built in the next year to 18 months is the question mark.
Is there any sign of the timber and steel coming back a bit in price, kind of like, or is that going to take a while to kind of get through the system?
It'll take a while, Jack. You look at the felon license thing, it still is a pure disaster. Like, yes, there's been, I think, 140, 150 odd licenses approved in the last few months. The department said that would have been at 400, like, and there was a real push in the last few weeks. Look, which in itself is positive, but a lot more needs to be done. Like the merchants, I caught up with a few of them this week just to see what they seen. And like really are looking at is the price that they're buying the timber in is the timber that's going to be sold in November, December, January, February, March. So you're not going to see any short-term slowdown. There's been a massive reduction in prices in the US, but that will take a long time to come onto global markets, because even some things like we've seen Russia respond and put a lot more timber onto the European market and onto more global markets. China were buying up a lot of timber as well. Nice. But the price of timber increased domestically in just the same way as Argentina doing the beef. They put on an export duty and that slowed it down.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to be a year, Jack, looking at these sort of maybe stop starts. And definitely we need to get domestic production sorted out. Like one merchant said to me, he said, a sawmill I was talking to, he said like this, they're working at the moment on 50 to 60% of the produce coming from Scotland. He said they're sending stuff out to the UK because the UK is a big market and they're bringing it back in, which makes no sense, he said, the process.
Last one, Darren, and I'll leave you alone. In terms of ANC, we mentioned it there with Adam in terms of the beam payment and the check was coming out of the ANC payment. Like in terms of, there's a difference there between what has actually been paid? You know, is it something like, you know, is it over 80,000? And maybe is there closer to 100,000 getting the ANC? Like, I mean, why have some got it and some not? Or what's kind of happening there?
Yeah, so if we look at the figures, Jack, 85,000 farmers getting 182 million. Comparing to 86,000 getting 185 million this time last year. So that's the starting figure. Now, that figure could be due to, say, Adam's Beam fellas maybe not getting payment this year, only, say, maybe 1,000 or whoever, many of them not getting any payment at all. Maybe that's what's feeding into it. The reason between, I suppose, if we take the 85,000 figure and our 98,000 figure, or 13,500 farmers, is mostly due to stocking rate. So farmers have two stocking rates to meet.
Yeah.
One is 0.15 of a livestock unit across the 12 months. The other one is that 0.15 has to be over a 7-month consecutive period as well.
Yeah.
And the department can pick that up straight away on, say, the beef side or on suckler side or dairy side. But when it comes to sheep, horses, donkeys, they can't pick it up. So there is farmers who could have satisfied it, but the department won't have picked it up because they go off the sheep census every year. And what they're encouraging farmers to do is that if you have satisfied it now, to contact them to say you have, and look, you'll have to put in a bit of proof. Usually it's your flock register or maybe dispatch books or maybe copies of that, just to show that you have the required numbers. Okay. But it's worth sitting down and looking the figures on Inside Back page this week off the stocking rates, and it's worth farmers just maybe sitting down to see when will I meet it or say when it's going to come, because look, it's an important payment.
Okay, Darren, 100%. Thanks for that. We'll chat again next week. Aidan, Moor Park, big open day crowds. Like, I mean, there was a lot of people saying it should have been called off and it should have been this and that. I mean, there was big crowds there over the 3 days.
Yeah, Jack, you definitely say Chagas were justified in holding it at least, you know, because I think it was 5,000 or 6,000 people probably over the course of the 3 days. And it was a success, like, in fairness. You know, the weather held off for most of it. First day was a bit wet, but ground held up very well. I thought it would be much more slobbery than it was. But no, it was good. Like, I mean, some strong messages, Jack. Like, the first board was about sustainability. But normally, in other years, that might have been down the line a bit. So a strong message on, you know, clover. And really, clover is the main one. Really, you had to take away from it, like, in terms of what you're going to do for sustainability. Because, you know, pressure on slurry storage and pressure on nitrogen usage in new CAP, the new nitrates action program.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about the clover before, and in terms of kind of, I suppose, the research that has gone into it previously, and I suppose the especially the variety piece, Aidan, like, you know, in terms of, you know, there's lots of talk of grass varieties and what's happening there, but the kind of the clover variety piece probably doesn't get the same attention.
No, and like, it's a lot of hearsay, as you know. Such and such a variety works well in Moor Park, or such and such a one works well in Clonakilty, or they're using a different variety in Solihull, or, you know, such and such a farmer uses this variety and it works well, but very little science around it, like, you'd have to say. Now, look, there is a clover breeding program, but it's probably not a clover evaluation program, really, in terms of on-farm stuff like there is for the grasses. Like, in fairness to Moor Park, they put a lot of effort in over the last 10 years in the on-farm evaluation for grass varieties. And you've a big bank of data built up on that now, but you probably need to do the same on clover and grass clover swards in order to increase the knowledge of what works and what doesn't work.
Aidan, we mentioned before kind of on the nitrate side of things, and we talked about kind of the maybe potentially that they open the slurry volumes like later on in the year, in terms of, like, at the moment I think the number is something like 0.33 cubic meters per cow per week, we'll say. And the talk is that might go up over and above it. Like, this is separate now to our whole discussion around organic nitrogen going up, you know, per cow on the dairy side of things, you know. So, I mean, is that kind of confirmed, or where is that in terms of the kind of mix, in terms of this whole nitrates discussion, this consultation piece that's up and going? Like, I mean, where is that kind of slurry volume piece? Because, like, I mean, a lot of guys, I was just talking with Darren there, you know, all the new planning permission pieces that are going in, 370 new bills in quarter two of 2021. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people planning to do something. Like, you know, they might be planning in the right direction anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So where that's at is, apart from saying that those tables, that information is on in terms of the 0.33 per dairy cow per week of slurry storage requirement, is based on these tables that are in the nitrates directive. And the Department of Agriculture or the nitrates expert group have decided that they're going to review those tables. But they're saying that's going to be published in December. Now, at that stage, like, there'll be no, like, consultation to be finished, so it's black and white at that point. Now, I know the IFA have come back and wanted that to be pushed back, and that they're going to do a Chagas study on it, is my understanding, is what the IFA have requested. So whereby, effectively, a bunch of cows will be put into a chamber and their amount of effluent or slurry produced from them will be calculated. Like, the alternative to that is to do a modelling, which is where most of the stuff is coming from now, in terms of the tables, particularly on the banding, as we've discussed. Yeah. So that remains to be seen what's going to happen there. I think myself, the department, is just going to pick a figure based on the modelling exercise. I know we had it at the front page last week. It was, you know, at the moment, Ireland, you know, the Republic of Ireland is about 12% lower than it is in Northern Ireland. And I think it's something like 35% lower than it is in Denmark. Now, they have different levels of milk yield in those countries. So it is a function of milk yield. So it remains to be seen where it's going to go. But I think it's coming, yeah. Jackie. I think you have to accept the fact that you probably need to be factoring in, like, it could rise by 10% anyway.
Mm, yeah. The other piece we've talked before again about is kind of Glanbia and that whole piece around the kind of the reserve pool allocations. I mean, we mentioned it here again last week. Any kind of farmer feedback in terms of what they've got? They've got the letters in the post at this stage, and I suppose got a feel for what's coming over the next couple of years.
Yeah, so we were in Moor Park for the last couple of days, Jack, and talked to a good few farmers, and there's mixed messages out there, mixed feelings, I should say. The messages are fairly clear, some farmers are reasonably satisfied, and they're the ones that really aren't saying a whole lot to me. You know, they're asking how you get on, they're happy with it, and they'll say, reasonably happy. And they're not too vocal because they want to keep that kind of quiet, like, you know, naturally enough. But then there's others then who are very upset about it. Like, I was talking to a few young farmers at it, one of whom was contract rearing, got no recognition for the fact that those animals are, he owns them, but they're not in his herd number, so they weren't used. And he had 200 cows and planned to go to 300 cows and no longer allowed to do so. And a number of instances as well where the cows are there, the land is there, had increased, you know, increased cow numbers, increasing land area, and still only got 20% of what he looked for. And you know, so I think there's a number of affected farmers. The advice from Gambi is that they need to discuss that with their area manager. But like, you know, it's they're not getting much hop is the feeling I'm getting from them. And really, it's down to the you know, Sean Malloy and then that's going to determine, I suppose, you know, he's head of the program, so he's going to determine what's going to happen. No?
Yeah. So for those hardship cases, there is still some hardship cases, as you say, where the stock, because I mean, they went on the stock numbers that were actually in the herd number. So like, and if they were gone off the herd number, for example, that contract rearing person, yeah, or if they were potentially, if someone was potentially going to buy heifers, like they couldn't see them, so they didn't allow anything for it.
That's my understanding. They did review the figures with ICBF in terms of what stock are available, so that would make sense in that instance. And like, you know, but I suppose those farmers didn't get a call back, you know, which is the issue, I suppose, that caused a lot of anger, Jack, is that, you know, they say that they had direct engagement with 900 farmers, and then, you know, 89% of the all the people that applied got between 60-82% of what they looked for. But like, you know, a lot of farmers got much less than that, and they felt that they weren't contacted to say that their application was altered or was changed. And some people got like 40-50%, which wasn't part of the press release that can be issued at all. So like, you know, there's been a number of, you'd say, things that would frustrate farmers about the whole process. Now, look, Glanby don't want to be fair to them. They don't want to be in this position either. No. They've been forced into it by the appeals. But like, at the same time, I suppose a bit of straight talk and probably wouldn't go astray either. In order to their suppliers. No?
Okay. We had the NDC and Kerrygold Quality Milk Awards at Inmore Park on the Wednesday, Aidan. And I know you were hosting a number of workshops there with Dave Leeson and the milk quality team in Moor Park during the couple of days. Like, I mean, were you getting much kind of chat around that whole area of milk quality, or kind of is the chlorine free thing settled in now at this stage? Like,
well, it's funny one, Jack. Like, so it's only come into law, I suppose, since January. So, you know, we can't use chlorine now in any milking cleaning equipment. But like, in fairness to the processors, they've been working on it for the last, year or two. They knew this was coming. And in general, the milk quality advisors I spoke to were reasonably content that you know, farmers have adapted to it fairly well. There are issues. And generally speaking, you know, you can kind of put your hat in it, that the issues are going to be where there's not enough hot water. So that's a key thing, that you need more hot water and more regular hot washes now than you would have before with chlorine. And like, I mean, David Gleeson was there and he was reminiscing about the chlorine days, like, because it was so easy to clean machines when you're able to use chlorine. But now that it's not there, it's much more difficult. You need more products. So the importance of parasitic acid in the final rinse is critical. That's an additional rinse as well, which just catches some people. But the type of product as well, and the way it's used. I mean, there is variation of products out there, but generally speaking, at this stage, Jack, what the co-ops are supplying tend to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. So they're not selling products, I suppose, for cleaning milk machines unless they stand over it themselves. And it's the rate then is the heating as well. So if you're using automated you know, washing systems, like the little hoses and the pipes can get blocked, yeah, or else the pumps don't suck up the new product as well as it sucked up the last product because it's more viscous. So there's a couple of little small things that cause problems. But like, you know, I take heart from Jack that it can all be solved and you can get really good milk quality, even while chlorine free.
Excellent, Aidan, 100%. Thanks for that. I mean, speaking of milk quality, earlier I had a chat with the overall winner of the competition, Alex McCarthy from Fianna in County Limerick, about what's happening in the fields around Limerick. In fairness, Alex, it's been a roller coaster couple of days for you, because I mean, a lot has happened. The Moor Park Open Day, and it was announced on the Wednesday morning, and you kind of had to spend the day then talking to farmers, I suppose, throughout the day on Wednesday. So here we are, and it's only beginning to settle in. Can you maybe just tell us a little bit about the farm, where you are, who's involved, etc., and that kind of thing, and just kind of give us a flavour for the farm and what's happening.
Yeah, so Jack, as we said there yesterday, I suppose I'm farming full-time my parents. My involvement is just coming up in 4 years now, full-time this time, but I was behind the scenes for a good bit, so...
Yeah, I mean, that came out a lot, like, because, I mean, like, you're born on this farm, like, you know what I mean? You're farming all your life to an extent, you know, but you're back full-time in your own right, farming in partnership for the last 4 years, kind of.
Yeah, sure. I was dealing with the four, Jack, like, so I suppose like I had to go away for a bit and let him rest of them. So yeah, I'm home with mum and dad, and we've a younger brother just coming on the scene. Maybe he's just out of egg college, so we'll see where it goes in the next maybe 5 to 10 years time. So at the moment, we're happy where we are now.
Yeah, you have a good square ground there, Alex. Just talk to us in terms of kind of just in total hectares and kind of cow numbers and kind of ye in terms of what stock you keep, we'll say, around the farm at the moment.
Yeah, so we want one Mickelbach owned, I suppose. That's about 58 hectares owned, I suppose, and that's stocked up around three there. So 170 cows is where we're at the moment. And then there's three other out blocks on leases, like, so I suppose from silage ground to a small beef enterprise and just replacement stock, like, so they're all doing their own bit, like.
Alex, coming back to kind of you, I mean, as you say, you went away for is it fair to say you have a big interest in machinery and agricultural engineering as such, like, have you?
Yeah, that was the road I went down. Yeah, I left Peliskindry Ag College and went working with the main John Deere dealer and did so happily for 10 years, like, so but I suppose mum and dad moved on, like, and work gets harder, so I was always going to come home, so it just happened. So I got 10 years mechanic experience under my belt, so which is a help around the farm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's it. It's a skill set and it builds into kind of what you're going at, like, or what you're planning on going at kind of long term anyway. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a big change, Alex, like, kind of leaving every day, coming back, you know. I mean, it's like you were probably part-time farming during the mechanical time as well, like, you know, but now that you're full-time on the farm, do you find it a big difference in terms of getting through work or getting work done, like, or kind of, like, I mean, the fact that you're, like, your mum and dad, in fairness, are healthy, wealthy and wise, like, they're still able to help you on the farm in terms of the paperwork, in terms of the physical stuff, even from day to day, like.
Yeah, it does, actually, like, thank God, they're still hale and hearty, like, it still is a busy dairy farm, but, like, obviously, when you're coming and going there for an hour more and even what you can get done is barely milk the cows and you're out the gate. But as regards getting involved in the business side and the decision making and things, is what you look forward to. Like, we don't know, milk cows and stuff like that, like, but you like to get involved in the decisions which influence what you do and make the tweaks when you're at home. Like, so put your own stamp on the place, really, is what I can do for the last 4 years.
Yeah, like, I, you know, from my short visit on the farm, like, I mean, you're getting more and more into the grass, like, you know, in terms of, like, you know, the clover piece and the grass measurement piece and kind of watching it in terms of, you know, using the pasture-based app on your phone and a few bits and pieces, like, you're really beginning to, you're getting into the grass piece more and more, like.
Sure, we are, like, as well. We have a very good advisor there on the pasture-based, like Tom O'Connor, so he gets you going and all that. But I suppose another thing is there's healthy competition around. I have a handful of friends my own age involved in the farm as well, so there's a bit of a sure, there's a bit of competition, but not even competition, but just a bit of interest amongst us all, like, so I suppose, correct. Like, but drives you into as much as anything, like, just to see what you're at in person.
The other piece, from the quick farm visit was that, in just in terms of, like, kind of, I call it some of the stuff that's in the headlines at the moment in terms of the environment and the biodiversity and all that kind of thing. Like, you planted it. Like, I'll say that you've probably traditionally the piece was to remove trees or to, you know, I mean, to not to remove them, but I mean to maybe, you know, limit, I suppose, the amount of trees in the farm. But you're planting hedges and you're kind of doing a little bit more. Like, there's a strategic decision there to kind of to put more trees, to put more hedgerows on the farm.
There is, that's the avenue we're going down now, but I suppose that would never take another hedge for no reason. Just fields were small and fields were off square and drawn. Yeah. Roads didn't line up, so it was more from just making life easier kind of thing rather than gaining land. But I suppose now, like, we do, like, we're being kind of, we're in derogation, like, so we're being encouraged to do it and we have to do it, like, which is, but even you can see it immediately after 1 or 2 years, like, of not trimming hedges, you can see birds come back, you can see fruit, like, and so that's why it really pushes into replanting more hedges, like, so I suppose they'll come to yeah, sent us in years on the road.
Absolutely, as you look ahead, like, I mean, the other piece is like you have super facilities on the farm in terms of, you know, slurry storage, cubicle spacing. You've a smashing kind of, you know, nothing big flash, but a 16 unit parlour, like, isn't it 16?
Yeah, 16, Jack. Yeah, with cluster movers and all that. Yeah.
Straightforward, no messing, but very practical. Like, and you know, you can put a lot of cows through it. Like, whether it's 100, 160, 250, like it would, you know, I mean, you could. It's very flexible. Like, it's fair to say, like,
it's there now in almost 20 years, like, so we're looking at maybe a possible extension. Like, it's still a good parlor, like, we just thought to throw it out, like, so a small extension will just give us back there 20 minutes maybe in the mornings again, like,
The dairy again is a fine big space. Like, you go to a lot of farms and like the dairy is the smallest place, and you know, it's dark and it's hard to get around and there's a lot of stuff in it. Like, I mean, your dairy, you push the tank outside at some stage, I'd say, kind of it's an upright tank outside, we'll say, and that left the dairy open for other bits and pieces.
For everything, whiteboards, meetings, like, sure, obviously, you know, we all have our big detergent barrels. It makes life way easier, like, but, like, we were pricing up that time. Would we go indoors and extend the shade and incorporate the tank again? But, like, the outdoor silo seemed to be the option that fitted at the time, like, and Jesus, we're very happy with it now, since, like, even a lot of people do comment on it and probably will go down that road again, like, with the outdoor mill tanks.
I'd agree 100%. Like, it just you know, the space piece inside is good for, as you say, for all that kind of stuff that you were talking about. Milk quality is the ticket into this competition, I suppose. And you were nominated by Kerry Agri to go forward to represent them. I mean, your results are very good. Like, I mean, they're, you know, throughout the season, kind of less than 80 for cell count, like, and TBCs kind of twos, threes, fours. You know, I mean, like, it's fairly consistent, Alex. Like, you put a lot of effort into getting both of those right.
Yeah, sure. I suppose, like, yeah, mum and dad, 40 years ahead, like, and I suppose I'm just tweaking it a bit now. Like, but even it's like clean is the word. Like, parlors clean, yards are clean, tubules are clean, and tails even. Big into cutting tails every month there, just keeping cows clean. Like, sure, you couldn't be clean enough. Like, so I suppose that's our main angle from it, really. Like, you know,
The cows themselves, that when you talk about clipping tails and all that, like, I mean, it's a Holstein Friesian herd predominantly. Had you maybe one or two, you know, maybe was there one or two crossbreds maybe, but it's
just one or two, maybe, Norwegian Reds or
German. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's Holstein Friesian, and like they're producing the goods. Like, I mean, in terms of fat and protein, like, I mean, the fat is averaging 4.2 for the year that we were, the 2020 year that we're looking at, in terms of results, in 361, give or take, for the protein. Like, do you see that improving, like, as kind of more young stock come into it, Alex?
We do, Jack, really, I suppose, yeah. Like, breeding is probably one of my weakest subjects, really. Like, so it takes, like, 4 years. You won't pick it up in 4 years. But, like, just the bull choice alone for this year, like, was, you know, we're going towards percentages. Like, they have the yield, like, so we're just tweaking the percentages maybe, and just the body size, I suppose, maybe just to improve efficiency. Like, but we do like the black and white, stylish, strong cow, like, you know, so we're not going to go away from that, like, just tweak him a bit.
Oh no, and if it's delivering and you can get your fertility and you can get your milk solids, like, I mean, that's what we want. Like, you know, whatever way you come about it, like, I mean, that's the goal, and you get more fat and protein. That's what Kerry Agri wants. So, I mean, if it's high quality, you know, you're ticking a lot of boxes. I mean, down through the years, you've had a good bit of trouble with, you know, heart health issues, like, you know, in terms of, like, you were, there was a BSE piece, wasn't there? And there was a TB piece as well, or brucellosis, I think, on the farm. Like, I mean, a lot of farmers go through those challenges at certain times, but your parents and you built it back up again.
Yeah, sure. Brucellosis was well before my time. I can remember the BSE at that time, right? Like, and obviously, as a child, only, thank God, I don't have any major stories telling, like, but mum and dad have rebuilt it from scratch, like, and it does. No, but it was all headaches, like, but, you know, they love what they do, and sure, like, that was what they did, and they didn't complain about it and just got on with it again, like, and here we are today, like, really, so.
I mean, as you said, maybe is James into the farming as well? Is he into the farming?
He's into the farming. So, like, we'll see. There's an option there. Like, remember, that'll be phasing out over a couple of years. I'm sure he could phase in or whatever. Like, so.
Exactly. It's just family help on the farm in the main, Alex. What do you contract out, or what? I know you have your own slurry spread and dribble bar equipment and etc. and that kind of thing. What do you contract out?
I suppose some of the fertilizer there in the springtime, I suppose, Jack, is the main one, like, you know, and then obviously sure, during the season, then you have your digger work and your odds contracted out and your silage, baling, the whole tidying, and even back into the other receding, like, so just we like to do our own fertilizer and story, like, it gives you the opportunity to target paddock by paddock as opposed to just blanket spreading slurry. You know, we're trying to build the index, just improve the indexes.
That's a big one, like, and I've, you know, a lot of farmers say that, like, you know, that we're pushing everything on the contractors, like, and but I mean the control that farmers have with their own tank and their own, even though it's big money, like, I mean, you're looking at, if you're looking at a half decent tractor and a half decent tank and a dribble bar, it's big money, you know, but as you say, you're using it to replace bag fertilizer, and that's the, you know, if we look at the open day in terms of where it's going, you know, the travel is less bag fertilizer, more nutrients being used to grow your grass, like, that's what everyone
wants. That is the advantage we see of it. It probably satisfies my machinery. having a bit of machinery around the yard, like, so. But like, we can see it even on the indexes alone, like, just carrying the slurry off farm to the silage ground, like, he's even working a treat there the last 2 years, like, showing, following around heifers and stuff, so we're making progress on the outside farm as well with Dean.
Remind me, is it a dribble bar, is it, Alex?
It's a dribble bar, dribble bar.
So I mean you're able to go on there where there is a little bit of a cover of grass, like, you don't have to be in the next day after the cows have grazed it out or whatever, you know, and you can, like, there's a bit of flexibility in that in terms of using it and getting out to kind of places, you know, because you know you can't drop everything and go at it every day, you know.
No, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. We did comment on that ourselves this year now again, like, you can afford to maybe the 2 or 3 fields come together and then you go, like, you're not out the day of the trying to beat the regrowth, as they say, like, you know, with the slurry.
I think there's a big piece there in terms of the other piece that you know, in terms of, we talked about it again, the selective dry cow therapy, you know, as in you're kind of you have a good handle on the quality of your cows and the mastitis side of things, and you know that there is a portion of the herd that potentially don't need blanket dry cow therapy, like, that's like you're again you've been working on that a bit, like.
Yeah, sure. I suppose I'm home 4 years now, but I suppose it really came in the last year, I'd say. You know, when we were increasing the herd there, Jack, we were probably holding on to maybe one or two too many cows, and the silicone was maybe not as on top of as we were, but, like, really now, since we have started maturing the herd, and you can see that we can really get stuck into the selective dry cow, like, up in 80% of the herd probably doesn't receive any antibiotics, like, and looking at figures this year coming in, it'll be well up in 80, if not more again, like, so we wouldn't, we're not afraid of it, really, and it's a labour saving year in the springtime as well, you're not washing cows as hard, and it's just a bit of peace of mind, like, as well, like,
during lactation, then, are you using much antibiotics, Alex, like, or how are you working kind of a case of mastitis at the moment, like, we'll say if you pick up something?
Yeah, I suppose this year's slightly more of a problem than last year, like, there's maybe half dozen cases there, so they'll be treated, like, off the local vet, wherever he prescribes, box of tubes maybe, and if an anti-inflammatory, like, but usually one course of treatment, and that's the starter for the year, like, I suppose we have tried maybe some of these non-antibiotic maybe bolus and things, so we're just starting to dip the toe in, and we don't know if they're for us or not, but like, obviously if they work, they're going to be a big team, like, so.
There's more and more kind of farmers, as you say, just kind of having a look at that type of thing, because there's no milk withdrawal is one of the big ones, like, you know, although they're expensive, like, you know what I mean, a lot of them are kind of, you know, 20, 30, 40 euros a piece, like, you know, but there's more and more farmers kind of looking at it because of the milk withdrawal piece and the hassle and all that kind of thing, like, you know, so, but there's no real conclusive results out of that yet either, like, another kind of a way in terms of independent research piece, like, you know, so it's one that I think is worth a look at. No, fair play, Alex. Like, I mean, I think you're ticking a lot of boxes in terms of what I suppose a lot of farmers are looking for, and I think you've excellent results to back it up, and fair play to yourself, and Michael and Marietta, and I'm sure young James has a part to play in it as well. Like, so, and obviously your wife Siobhan is getting more and more involved. I know she's her own work to look after as well. You know, but. But it's a real family affair in Limerick on this one. Like,
that so, is, you look forward to spring again now, because they're all out in the springtime again. It's a real family affair when the work is there. Everyone's out. Like, this time of year, obviously it's more of a streamline. But one of the things you look forward to next spring again is getting everyone back involved and stuff. So.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, and indeed to Alex McCarthy from Limerick, the overall winner of the NBC Kerrygold Quality Milk Award, for joining us. If you want more from Farmers Journal webinars, go to farmersjournal.ie/webinar, including the Thrive webinar and the Dairylink virtual farm walks from Counties Down and Tyrone that were broadcast in the last week. Remember, you can listen to this show as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.